and welcome to Hallmarked for Murder. We're back. I'm Kat.
I'm Sarah.
And we have experienced our first and a really necessary podcaster fail or rite of passage. The last episode that we recorded just completely has lost time.
It's there. The file's there. The MP3. The .mp3 file is there.
You can watch it go just
for an hour and 20 minutes. You can watch the timer countdown, but there's no sound, no matter how hard you listen.
Yeah, we're blaming Sarah's nemesis or friendsnesis.
Friendsnesis.
Mm-hmm. Ben, who I think maybe has a crush on her.
Oh.
And maybe that's why he behaves the way that he does. But
by destroying our podcast.
Yes.
I hope he never listens to
this. Has he not
this.
Gotten some nice attention since that happened? We just brought him in for some extra. He got to
consulting time.
He got to mansplain to us a little bit more.
That's true. Well,
so who's the winner in this situation?
You know, it could be you that he has the crush on, because really we don't have evidence either way. It's pure speculation. So why not speculate even further?
So we are going to take a little pause from the Fixer Uppers, we do have an audience now, by the way. I finally figured out how to release this podcast after, I think, almost a full year. So that's exciting. So we have three followers. I'm one of them. So we have two followers.
Well, am I one of them yet?
Oh, maybe. So maybe we have one follower.
And I think Summer, shout out to my BFF in on the Pacific coastline, who has been listening sometimes a little bit. Geography. She might be another follower of ours.
Oh, okay. So we have maybe zero followers, but we have had some listens. So that's exciting.
It's pretty exciting.
So the first Fixer Upper, apparently people do not care about crossword. Poor Lacey. I mean, she's doing fine. But the Fixer Upper was by far the most popular episode.
Okay.
And so
do you think it was my singing?
Yes, I do. You did a flawless Jewel impression. I actually listened to the episode, which was a first, and I was dying laughing. So, so we did have a really great takedown of movie 2, where she also sings. We'll revisit that after we've had some time to
heal.
Yes. So in the meantime, we're just going to take a little time travel back to 2014, which was clearly a very different time based on this movie, to Along Came a Nanny. Actually, did I get that name right?
Yes.
Okay.
Or yes, you did. And also 2014.
Mm-hmm.
That makes things make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it, do you think it was all Me Too? Is that sort of when or was it a combination of things where we had a real cultural shift around treatment of women, women's bodies, women's agency? I mean, was that all Me Too, or were there other?
No, I struggle with last week and remembering what happened then. So,
okay. You're not real have your finger on the pulse of
the Me
cultural
Too
shifts.
Movement. No, I also never did have my finger on the pulse of that. I kind of went over my head. There was a lot going on in my life at that point.
There's definitely a change in our culture now, in those how we represent women, how we talk about women, and
okay.
And then
I kind of just clued into what you were saying, which is that this movie was pre Me Too, and that's why it is the way
or
that
pre
it is.
Whatever
the shift
cultural was.
Shift.
Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot of gendering in this that's
played for a gag.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So this is was a one-off mystery, and they never made it into a series. There are a couple of these different ones. There were a couple that came to mind when I was trying to think what we could do. And I remembered I kind of remember liking this at the time. I'm sure it was just sort of this was a fun romp, which is the word that I use when I watch something and it's enjoyable and then I immediately forget about it. Detective Mike Logan takes on a special undercover assignment as a nanny when a quiet upscale neighborhood is turned upside down by a string of robberies.
Poplar Point.
When the mystery begins to unravel, new relationships are threatened. That's the IMDb description. Not bad. So Mike Logan sounded familiar. Played by Cameron Matheson. And I kind of thought that he actually is maybe playing the same character as he does on a different mystery series. Apparently, that's Mike Kingston, which is the character that he plays, also a detective, in the Murder, She Baked / Hannah Swenson mysteries, which they're still making. They just came out with a new one, and they're currently filming another one. So that's actually still going on. And he plays Detective Mike Kingston. But I thought that would be cute if he was playing, like, the same character.
Yeah.
I mean, that would kind of...
Like a little spin-off. Like a side quest.
Maybe things didn't work out with Jessie. She got her PhD. She moved to the Pacific Coastliner.
She realized
Coast
that
Liner,
maybe the armed militia that runs our streets wasn't someone she wanted to partner with for the rest of her life. Maybe, hopefully.
And then he moved on to Hannah Swenson. I don't know. But no, Mike Logan, it turns out, Detective Mike Logan sounded familiar because that was Chris Noth's character from Law & Order, which seems like a real ripoff. Like, that's a very well-known detective character. They probably could have picked a different name.
Okay, I've always said his name as Noth, but that doesn't make any sense when you think of the word Roth.
I have no idea how it's pronounced.
But. Sorry, that just kind of threw me, but you can't just rip off Law and Order.
I mean, is there anyone who has not been touched by the Law and Order franchise, like that hasn't spent at least 1 to 34 Saturdays just like watching a whole marathon?
Oh,
of them?
I see. Yeah.
Surely. Maybe that was just sort of like, they're like, this sounds like a cool name, and then like didn't Google it.
Mike Logan.
Detective Mike Logan.
Also, Logan is the detective from the crossword puzzle mysteries.
Yeah.
I think it's like the Irish thing. Like Hallmark really wants us to know that there's like a lot of Irish cops or something. I don't know. But Logan, isn't that an Irish name?
I don't know.
Now I'm blanking. Well, we'll never know.
There's no way to know. Okay, so we will cover, I think, Murder, She Baked. They used to be Murder, She Baked, and then for some reason they started calling it Hannah Swenson.
Maybe Murder, She Wrote chimed in and ceased and desisted.
Well, they were, it was a book, their book series or whatever was a Murder, She Baked series.
Oh, actually, I remember stalking that when I used to work at Borders Books and Music.
Oh, yeah. And then for some reason, a couple of years ago, they switched it. It's real controversial now because similar to Mystery 101, they ended the latest Murder, She Baked or Hannah Swenson on a romantic cliffhanger. And everybody was like, I mean, whoever was left after the Mystery 101 bomb went off.
Oh, that sort of, I
this
just flashed
really
back a little
triggered
bit.
People. Like, oh my God, like this, they cannot do this to us. I wasn't as invested in the relationship. Also, the whole thing was very silly and contrived and wasn't earned, I didn't think. But there's another one in production. Like, they're going to resolve it. It's
but he's the main love interest.
He is the detective main love interest, yeah.
Huh.
Also named Detective Mike. But this was maybe when Murder, She Baked was a twinkle in Hallmark's eye. I don't know. Maybe they were consecutive. I'm not sure. But so he's a police detective. The female lead is Sarah Lancaster, who I think I know from Christmas in the Smokies. That's floating around on Netflix. So you might have seen that one, too, I think.
I don't think I saw that one. But she also really looks like, I can't remember her name. And it might be her. I don't know. But back when I was in the middle school years of my life and I watched this show called The OC, there was like a cool older girl on the show for a little bit, I think, that somebody liked and went to a bar with. And she looks exactly like her.
Apparently, she was on Saved by the Bell, the new class.
Oh.
Which looks absolutely horrifying based on the still photos that I saw from it. But Yikes. She was also in a movie called Fur Crazy, which I must have watched.
Oh, no. That's
just for the title.
I don't want to.
Love it. I love it. It's like a little catnip to me. So this movie starts with a burglary where a ski-masked jewelry thief knocks out the homeowner who just wanted to pee and go back to bed. Like, he's just, like, in the bathroom, like, da-da-da, he's going to go back to bed, and then wham. And he ends up in the ICU. So this is just the next in a string of robberies, and since the mayor lives in the neighborhood, she tears the police chief a new one about solving the case so she can win her re-election. We head to the police station where we find out Griff Houlihan is retiring. I had to do a bunch of rewinding and pausing around this time. Like, just when I kind of start a movie, like, there's a lot of pausing and rewinding. So I watched this scene, like, over and over again. And I had, like, convinced myself that Griff was the murderer.
Oh.
And that's why we were getting, like, this whole thing about his retiring and why he got such a very outlandish name. And like they're congratulating Griff on all his hard work and his storied career. Uh-huh. 32 years, I think we get like a whole story or whatever.
Yeah.
It turns out it's only relevant because one of the detectives will be promoted to replace him at level 2.
And there's some kind of like rivalry happening that they want to set up but doesn't really go anywhere in classic.
Well, but they're already
fashion.
Detectives. Like what's
well,
level
you know,
two?
It's like production specialist 1, production specialist 2, content writer 3. Like these really arbitrary pay scales that they give you at jobs and they're like, you can be a 3 whenever you've had 17 years of experience and we'll give you $2 more. It's that type of thing.
Well, the last couple of times I've been at Goodwill, they've announced over the PA system that there's a code 11, and I'm just like dying to know.
Oh,
what is code 11?
Poop in a donation bag,
or like I was thinking, it's like a severed body part in a donation,
money in a donation.
Ooh, or like that woman is here who keeps asking for like a very specific book. Like, oh, do you have? We get that. We get that at the
yeah, when there's no way to know.
Our book sale where they're like, do you have this specific book? I'm like, honey, I don't. Actually, what's weird is that sometimes I do know and I can go take them. That's sad. But or bed bugs spotted, maybe. Like,
oh,
this is a code 11.
Whenever we have bed bugs spotted at work.
Oh, God.
We have to like clear the room out and we have to wear like hazmat suits to go back in there. Well, we usually, and we have to like fumigate and do all of this stuff, but you have to wear like a hair covering and like things over your clothes because what if you get an egg on you and then you take it back to your house?
What is the code? Do you announce it?
No, I just go to the nurse's station and I say, oh no,
hey guys.
B11 has bed bugs. They just told
the
me. And then, yeah, and then the doctors put in contact precautions for the patient. And then, yeah, that's how
not
that goes.
As fun.
No. I wish I had a loudspeaker. Maybe a bullhorn.
Yeah. Wee-oo-wee-oo. A female detective has just closed a big case and is a shoo-in for the promotion, but instead Logan comes in and steals it from her, which is like a huge, like what a D.
Yeah. Like, he acts like so nonchalant in the briefing. He's like, I don't care. And then he like jets into the chief's room and he's like, I need that case for no reason. I just want to rub Rosario's face in it.
Are we supposed to like him? Like, this is just, like, we're supposed to be rooting for him. Like,
I rooted for no one in this movie, just for full disclosure.
Well, I was rooting for Ramos, which they called her, is her name Rosario?
Rosario Ramos, yeah.
And for some reason, they sometimes call, well, I guess they call him Mike, too.
Right. Yeah, but I agree. I think she was maybe the behind-the-scenes hero of this movie. You know she does all the paperwork.
Oh, for sure. So I wrote, you know, a lady detective is serious when she wears a vest.
Mm.
And then he comes in out of the office and makes fun of her vest.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt really bad. But I hate this guy. And I was wondering, can Hallmark redeem this guy by the end? TBD. So Logan's idea is to embed himself into the neighborhood as a nanny. Content warning, this movie uses the term manny with zero hint of irony. People just like will constantly just throw out the, like, in all seriousness, referring to him as a manny.
Is that not a thing anymore?
No, I don't think so.
Do you remember that show? It was one of those shows. I can't. Oh, man. What was it called? It's designed, like, every episode is designed to make you sob uncontrollably.
This Is Us.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Wow, that was really good. We didn't even pre-plan that. That was amazing.
I knew exactly what you were talking about.
That original triplet, I don't even know where the show was. I watched, like, five episodes and I couldn't do it anymore.
Because it wasn't earned.
It was, like, not earned.
Why are you...
It was... You're manipulated. The tears were wrung out of me by force.
Yeah.
It was not cathartic. Cathartic?
No, it made me furious. Cathartic.
Anyways, he's in a show called The Manny. That's like his show at the very beginning. He's I'm more than the Manny. But his whole thing is that he takes off his shirt in every scene or something. Mm. I don't know why I remember this so vividly. But that's the last time I remember hearing the term Manny.
Oh, that's great.
I don't remember what year that was.
Mm. Also in 2014, a man driving a minivan is like a joke. Like
oh,
a huge
right.
joke.
Haha, now you have a reason to be dateless.
He's undateable, I guess, because of the minivan. Like, also, why would the nanny have a minivan? Like, wouldn't the
family?
The family would have a...
Well, as we see, the family dynamics in this...
Yeah, this family is not making any, like, adjustments for the fact that they have children.
No, absolutely not.
So driving the other day, there was a sports car revving over and over, and John asked if I found it alluring.
Oh.
And that I reminded him that I recently told him I found it alluring when he and his male friend were being vulnerable with each other over the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of overheard it, and I was like, ooh. And he said, well, he doubts in 2023 that any person finds that car revving alluring. And I was like, I don't know. I bet.
No, they exist.
Mm-hmm.
If you're out there, write in. Let us know how you feel about the sound of a revving sports engine. Does it jitter your bug?
Do you go, ooh, ha-ha. Like when I heard one man sharing to another man how hard things have been, or, you know.
Do you remember that one time we were at the pool and we were eavesdropping on another dude, a hetero dude conversation about, like, this girl that one of them liked, and the other one was like, you just got to go for it. You just got to text her back. You know, you don't play games, and they were being so, like, open and...
I have overheard so many of those conversations. We live in a college town, so there's just so many bros, like, just together broing out.
Yeah.
And I've overheard so many, like, of those types of, like, just talking about relationships and what they're wanting.
Amazing.
And it's really, like, I'm like, oh, something's happening here, I think.
I think so. I think it's great. I don't like the sports car sound.
So in 2014, for sure, that would be getting a lot of action. Because in that world, a guy with a minivan is undesirable.
Right.
Just the butt of every...
But you know what you can do in a minivan? There's a lot of trunk space is all I'll say. So you could sit back there
very
comfortably.
It's a blast. I love minivans.
They're great.
I'm starting to wonder if the one note of this Hallmark mystery was going to be, look at this man doing things that are traditionally considered female duties and behaviors. Isn't it hilarious? But I was willing to give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Mike arrives at the home of the Bannermans, his new clients, who did apparently zero vetting and did not conduct an interview before leaving their children with him. They also leave without getting his phone number or giving him any information about the children.
And the children leave. So, like, what is he doing there? So he's not just a nanny. He's, like, a servant? Like,
I
a live-in servant?
Live-in servant, yeah.
And they're like, okay, everyone's going to school. We did their breakfast, blah, blah, blah. You just... hang out now in our house?
Even though we don't know anything about you. We don't have your phone number. There's a string of burglaries in the neighborhood.
It could have been him,
could
for all they
him.
Know.
Yeah, absolutely. We get a montage. This is what he's doing. Is that a montage of Mike not being able to do very basic adult things like working a washing machine, doing dishes, sweeping, or just like holding things without spilling them or knocking them over. He apparently cannot do any of those things.
So I watched this movie with my significant other, and I said, are we supposed to believe that a 49-year-old man actually does chores like that? And he said, you don't do chores like that? I kind of do chores like that. And I said, what? And he said, what? And that was that. But now I'm a little suspicious that that might be more common than I know.
So when he sweeps, like, does the whole thing just fall apart? And then he goes, whoop, 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 trying to put it back together?
No, I've never witnessed that.
And he's not able, he doesn't know how to just, like, close the dishwasher. He's got to, like,
turn around, Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe only when I'm gone.
Apparently, or he cleans it all up before you get home.
Maybe.
Or he, Frank just, like, sweeps it all up.
Maybe.
I could kind of see that.
Frank is happening. Yeah, just running around behind him.
The music during this montage, I couldn't quite.
Was it kind of like a budget? Everybody cut loose, but loose.
Or like what they would play like at a carnival. Like, I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but it was very zany.
Oh, that's a perfect word. Actually, so back when I
did Hijinks.
Video production, there was a website that we used to use for like free, like royalty free or whatever. I don't know. You know, you don't have to pay for it. It's like the rights are, it's open. And so you can just like type in keywords like zany or hijinks and it'll pop up like sounds that you might want to use.
This exact music. Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. So he then goes out and meets the other nannies, including Jessie, who is clearly the female love interest, because they clearly make the other two nannies like very different and not within the standards of Hallmark female leads.
Like, yeah, they're older.
Very narrow.
You know, I was a little thrown off, though, because of the just remarkable lack of chemistry between the two of them, that I thought maybe she actually wasn't going to be the love interest. And I said out loud, I think she's a red herring. She's got to be.
A romantic red herring.
A romantic red herring. And I thought maybe for a second she could even be the robber.
Oh, okay.
And that's why they spend a little extra time focusing on her face. But like, there was no way she could be the love interest because she was like, I'm aloof and I don't care about anything. I don't know. There was no chemistry.
Well, that's not uncommon for.
As I'm learning.
Yeah. That's not a prerequisite. Apparently this strange man that they Bannermans know nothing about is also living with them. So Mike gets a room that was designed for like a 10-year-old girl. But presumably this was the room of the previous nanny, who was presumably a grown woman.
Oh, Cookie.
Who would not have had a pillowcase that said, it's a girl thing.
She might have.
But actually, now that we get to know Cookie a little bit, maybe she
might have. Yeah, I could actually really see that.
I ended up loving Cookie, just FYI.
Yes, Cookie was my, we'll talk about her. Weird juxtaposition of like, I think he like talks to those ladies and then he goes into his room and he lays down and like it's nighttime. Like, did they ever come home? Did he ever do any nanny work on this first day?
Oh, I thought that it was in the afternoon. He took a nap and then he woke up when the kids came home.
That was the next day because they were let's have breakfast or something. It was like a totally next day. Like, it was very jarring.
I was confused.
It was very poor story editing.
Why were we suddenly in the next day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That was confusing.
Yeah. Because
then he had to work on the doll or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Oh,
okay. And he overslept.
Yes.
Which is why he didn't make breakfast or lunch. Right. Okay. That makes more sense.
Right.
So we just didn't see that first night.
Nope.
where they had an awkward dinner together or something. Like, what did he make? What did he do for dinner then?
And why is he making dinner? I don't understand. I don't get it.
So Mike biffs his first day by not making breakfast or lunch and not knowing how to sew a head back onto a decapitated doll, which I feel like that's a special skill. Anyways, I don't think just
seems
anyone
hard.
Would know how
yeah.
to do that. They miss the bus, which gives Mike the chance to aggressively pursue Jesse. And Mike is also asked on his first day to whip up a tofu stir fry. And instead of Googling a recipe or ordering delivery, he calls his cop friend to come bring him a takeout tofu dish from Panda Kitchen. So does that mean that do we think that he threw away the ingredients? Because the mom is like, everything's in the fridge for a tofu stir fry. So did he throw all of that out?
Like
so
the nice tofu and the eggplant and mm-hmm.
Is there like a rotting block of extra firm tofu in the trash that day?
Yeah, maybe he fed it to the dog.
Oh, God. Oh.
That's going to have some fart activity.
That sounds rough. So we get, just now looking back, there's so much stuff about this mayoral election in this film. Like, it's sort of a political rom-com mystery.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of it. And I was like, this has to pay off at some point. Like, the signs are everywhere. Like, there's a hot race to be mayor of
Poplar Point.
Is Poplar Point the neighborhood or the town?
Unclear.
But it's apparently 5 robberies are enough to swing a whole election. Like, everyone is, like, nothing happens in this town so much that 5 robberies are enough to, like, totally throw off the results. Like,
yeah.
No,
mm-hmm.
Let's get this chick out. She somehow is responsible for the fact that we haven't caught a robber. Like, how?
Not the police, her.
Yeah, so let's get her out. So that's kind of the overarching thread of this narrative, along with look at a grown man do girl things.
Mm-hmm. Nice summation, Kat.
Yeah. But, well, you know, humans are designed to pick up patterns in Hallmark movies. It's real
that's
hard.
What we're using our processing power for.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. We see that Mike really does care when he buys a basketball goal for the kid without asking the parents. Joe, I looked this up. Those cost like $500 to $1,000.
Oh, the goal he bought for Lucas Pucus.
Yes.
I wanted to quickly shout out the moment where we met Lucas's bully, because is this a Canada thing where the little kid was like, Lucas Pucus, don't even think about joining basketball. Like, what? Joining basketball? That's not even...
Don't even think about it.
Don't even think about it. And then there's a little kid in the background that, like, bucks at him, like, yeah, like, with his arms out. It was pretty shocking behavior.
There were several in this movie that I was very surprised that it made it onto this network. But we can get to that. But,
okay.
Yes, that's one instance.
Yeah.
So the child, I didn't even write their names down.
Lucas and
Ava.
Ava.
Or Emma? Or was Emma the...
Emma.
There was Jesse's charge.
Was Carly. The baby was Carly.
The baby was Carly, and then maybe the girl was
Emma. And I think Lucas's sister was Ava.
And Ava looked exactly alike.
Well, I don't want to be the type of person that tears down a child's appearance.
But I loved Ava.
Ava looked a specific way, for sure.
She did. She had a real look. I really liked it.
I felt like she looked very distinct from Emma, whose face I can't remember.
Yeah.
But Ava looked like Ava.
Okay. That's a good point. So Lucas Pucus, so Mike has used his newly found child psychology skills to determine that Lucas does want to play basketball. But he's letting these bullies, like psych him out or whatever. And so he goes and buys, like, a $1,000 basketball goal for the driveway. Forces him to play basketball.
Very normal.
Which I feel like if a kid said, hey, I don't want to join the team, I'd be like, okay, cool. What do you want to do then? But Mike knows. Mike the nanny. Nanny Mike.
Nay, Mike the bought and paid for father? because really shouldn't his dad be hey, buddy, let me help you with that basketball? And Mike was like, actually, no, let me help you with the basketball. Your dad's busy and he hates you. Subtext.
Uh-huh. Mike does some crime solving, and his as an experienced, I guess, level one detective means that he lists all of the names of the people that he's met and then just starts drawing lines between the people who know each other and arrows.
Slow line drawing.
And then he thinks about it a lot and he sort of stares at it a lot, and then he
draws another line, mm-hmm. and then maybe eventually he'll circle a name, mm-hmm. and will be agog.
And he will use this strategy again and again throughout the movie to solve the crime.
And why has no other detective thought about this in the last five robberies, that they could just make a list of all of the suspects and start drawing lines?
I feel like they're not even suspects. They're just like literally the people he's met in like the last day or two.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I met this guy.
Ava, Lucas, Chester the dog.
Chester. We'll get to Chester. So Mike also goes to talk to the wife of the man who was hit over the head by the robber. She's divorcing him and comes hard after Mike. Like she was oozing sensuality.
Yes, she has
real hardcore
golden eyeshadow on.
Oh. There's also more dialogue about this mayoral election, so I'm like really hoping this pays off at some point.
And she drives over her own lawn to get out of her car, out of her driveway.
Yeah. Mike and Jesse go for a coffee and have some mid-movie bonding. So this is like apparently just this is going to happen in all these movies, no matter what the era.
Mid-movie bond.
Maybe we should have a name for it.
Okay.
I came up with intimacy intermission.
Oh.
Or halftime vulnerability.
Okay.
But I have zero creativity right now, so.
Okay. Yeah. I can't extemp right now about that, but okay. We'll think about it.
I was shocked. I did listen to some of the episodes when we finally released them. And like back in the fall, like I couldn't believe how like on top of things I was. It was so shocking to me. Like, oh my gosh. Like, and I thought I was in really bad shape then.
You did. Yeah. You did think
but
that.
I was like operating at least at like 35% at that point. Now I'm just like full on like negative 15.
Yeah.
Like I can't. I was shocked. I was like, oh my God, I like remembered that. And I made a joke, or like, I couldn't believe it. Like the last, I guess, 6 to 9 months has really
whipped our booties.
Done a dookie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On our heads.
Mm-hmm. So during this coffee break, Jesse spills the truth about the Bannerman's previous nanny, Cookie, who was fired either for being inept and flaky, or because she was skimming money off of the expense account, which I wanted to know more about.
Yeah. What's Mike doing with the expense account?
Yeah, for real. Like, when did we miss that conversation? Was that in that first
night? Is that where he buys all the diapers?
Maybe that's why he bought the basketball goal, was off the expense account.
He's like, here, kids, let me spend your parents' money and get you a gift from myself.
Yeah, because like otherwise I was like, oh my God, these are really expensive.
Yeah.
And how did he get it home?
In the minivan.
On top of the minivan.
They're very versatile.
Do you think it was the push and go, the seats down?
Yeah, the seats down. And then they're in boxes when you buy them, like in segments.
So he had to assemble all that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Which is fine because he doesn't have anything to do with the kids while the kids are at school.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So I guess one or both of those things was just a girl thing that Cookie was doing. Cookie was also cousins with a man who was pursuing Jesse. Dean, who is on Mike's suspect list because one time he met him. So he's on the list.
Wow.
At that point. That was literally all that happened. They met.
Was it in the driveway?
He likes Jesse.
Mm-hmm. Where he made up Nanny Palooza?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which it didn't really seem like. Jesse wasn't really like giving any signs that she was uncomfortable or didn't want attention from Dean. So I'm not sure why he felt like he had to go in and like.
Well, you know, Kat, men know better than us what we want.
That's true.
In our relationships and interactions with other men. So.
yeah, I don't know. It was maybe it's like he like went over to sort of like needed a pee on the area or something.
Classic.
But she was like, oh, thanks. Nice save.
Yeah, they made plans to leave together for Nanny Palooza, and then they stood in the driveway, which apparently is where Nanny Palooza was taking place. If I were Dean, I would have maybe turned back around and been like, wait, are you going to Nanny Palooza? Or like, what is that?
Oh, and you know, he like pulled out of the driveway like super slow and was just like cruising very slowly in reverse and was like, they're still talking.
They're still talking.
The driveway. Wait, why is
what time does Nanny Palooza start?
I did like Dean at this point.
He was harmless. Yeah.
I thought he was really cute. And I was like, well, what's wrong with this guy? Like,
right.
We find out later what's wrong with him, but she doesn't know that at this time. So at this point, one of the other nannies' houses gets robbed. So Jesse and Mike decide to sort of get on the case together. And Jesse says she feels like they're in Turner and Hooch, except they're both humans. So it's like the weirdest possible reference to make to like a buddy cop.
Yeah.
Like there's literally
Starsky and Hutch.
I mean,
Mel Gibson
literally,
someone.
No, we can't think of any. Lethal Weapon.
Mel Gibson.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Ah, Beverly Hills Ninja.
21 Jump Street. I mean,
we're not writers,
not probably the people who would know all those things, but I think that
Turner and Hooch was a pretty weird choice.
It made me think there was some story behind it. Again, she brought it up again.
Yeah.
Later.
And I think that the writer of this was a man.
I think I remember seeing that during the
credits.
I was really busy pausing and rewinding that and ruminating about Griff Houlihan. Which would be a great like dog name.
Ooh,
a great dog name.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, wait, she's bringing up Turner and Hooch again the second time. And he reasonably then suggests that maybe Sherlock Holmes might be more appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
I just made a note that Chester probably has bloody paws from all of the, like, he's just being dragged around constantly by Mike.
Oh,
as, like,
he did not want to be on any of those walks. He was, like, constantly trying to get away from him. Felt pretty bad for Chester.
Come on, we're on the case here. We got to interrogate this person and this person and this person. And I'm just walking my dog.
This dog's very healthy.
Mike does more crime solving by drawing more lines and arrows. And I noticed that the lamp in the room has feathers glued all over.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Seems like a fire hazard.
Yeah.
But that's maybe another cookie.
Also,
I could see Cookie buying that lamp.
She's a little boho, but not at the same time.
She has like little bows in her hair.
Oh, yeah. Also, if level one detective is drawing lines and arrows, do you think level two detective is like
you get
hearts
access,
and stars?
You get an access to a computer at level three.
Oh, at level three,
like
the computer.
Laptop.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Maybe that's it.
It's the incentive.
This is literally the only thing we see is just like this one piece of notebook paper. And he's just staring at it for like a solid 7 minutes of this whole movie.
It's like in math class when the teacher wanted you to show your work. You know how you got to the answer, but really you just did it in your head and you were like, why would I show the work when I can just write the answer down? And he's really not showing us the work in this situation. Unless that's supposed to be the work, in which case I don't think he gets a good grade.
Yeah, no, that's the work. That is what is that? It's the slow lines and then like the arrows. That's where the work is being
done.
It is
very slow line drawing. I just don't feel like we can overemphasize that.
Jesse randomly leans down while they're walking to sort of coochie-coo the baby that she nannies. And Mike looks at her and she's like, oh, what? And he says, she'd make a great mother. And I like involuntarily out loud made like a noise.
Yeah. Very normal thing to say to someone that you're.
But people say stuff like that. Has no one told you something like that?
It's like they think, a stranger?
Or someone you know. Like they think it's a compliment, I think. But really, I just all I hear is that like my worth is as a woman is only in being a mother.
And only in how like emotionally inviting you are to an infant.
Yeah, it's like a weird, like, biological, like, oh, you, I need to spread my seed, and you would be a good caregiver for my spawn.
Blah.
Yeah, it really, really upset me.
Yeah, it was pretty, like, an intrusive, I think, thing to say.
And she wants to be, like, a child psychologist or something. Like, she doesn't have to be a mother. She doesn't have to have kids.
She's going to have a lot of kids on her plate in her job.
She'll be, yeah, she can, or not. Or she can not make a difference with children. She's still acceptable as a woman, as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so Cookie apparently now works for the McNamara campaign. Again, back to the election. And finally, this mayoral election threat is paying off. Mike heads down to McNamara HQ, which is the most well-funded mayoral campaign I've ever seen. And of course, it's Cookie who comes to greet him, wearing a name tag with her name, like, so embellished and huge and loud. And I love thinking about the production assistant who, like, put that together.
That seems like a really fun job.
I would love that.
The sequins, like a little giraffe sticker.
Uh-huh. I love to do that. I also, I have to say, I guess it's a little extra, and that's why they're Cookie's doing it. But
whenever, and her name is Cookie.
Whenever I write a name tag, I do sort of like add some flourishes.
Oh, good. Just to show people right off the bat, like from this visible thing.
I'm fun.
Cat's fun.
Yeah, this chick's
She's
really,
laid back. Her shoulders are relaxed.
She's like special.
Yeah.
She didn't just write her name.
She did a line underneath it.
With two little ch-ch. I do that too. Mike sees McNamara mayoral candidate making out with the wife of Donahue, who's the guy whose head got bashed in by the robber. And taking these notes made me realize, is this plot substantially more convoluted than most Hallmark mysteries?
Yes.
Because I was like trying to like write out like, oh, this person is related to this person, and this is how this person is connected. And I was like,
well,
oh, this is complicated.
Like, We haven't done Mystery 101 on air. We've done it in person a little bit. And a lot of those mysteries were a little too convoluted. And then we went to the crossword puzzle mysteries, which were also a little convoluted and then occasionally made literally zero sense in the end. And then we got to the Fixer Upper mysteries, which so far have actually like made sense as far as a narrative thread pulling all parts of the mystery together. Like, they do tie it up at the end, pretty much. And now we're back down in the trenches with...
I'm just trying to figure, like, sort all these
Dada-esque
things
murder
out.
Mysteries. Just whatever sticks.
And then we find out, in one of the more poorly written scenes, maybe ever, or in Hallmark land, I don't know... we learn that the family Jesse nannies for is bankrupt. Do you remember the scene? They're the playground.
Oh,
and the,
yes.
And Ava and her invisible-faced friend,
Emma.
Maybe Emma, I don't
maybe.
Know. Get
maybe
into
Emma.
A fight because one of them, I thought that Ava, no, I thought that Emma called Ava.
Emma called Ava a bank robber. And then Emma said, no, I didn't call you a bank robber. I called you bank robbed. And then Ava was like, I'm not bank robbed. And then they were like, go over there, kids. And then Jesse said, oh, no, my family's bankrupt. That must be what she meant. But I don't understand why the little girl would be calling Ava bankrupt.
Because it was Emma's family that was...
And so she knows that they're bankrupt? But once you think, like, the Bannermans... Like, who was... Ava's... No, Emma's family was bankrupt.
Uh-huh.
For real.
So that's where she'd heard the word.
And
so
then she was yelling it at Ava. And Ava's family, the Bannermans are not bankrupt.
Right, but maybe did she just, like, interpret it as a slur? And she was just trying to, like, trash on Ava and was like, you're bankrupt.
Yeah.
And I think Lucas is like... The word is bankrupt, stupid.
Yes, yeah.
Which I also was like, ooh.
Wow, Lucas. Yeah.
He seems troubled to me. I mean, I guess he sort of
Well, some very like astute child psychology from Mike at some point, I don't remember when, we do hear that Lucas is doing a moody, cynical thing and Mike is really trying to break through to him.
Oh, he's like that.
He's like telling the chief, he's like giving him updates at the station and he's like, the chief is asking for updates on the case. And Mike is like, well, Ava's really stuck playing princess with me. That's all she wants to do. And Lucas is doing this moody, cynical thing and he's acting like he doesn't care about basketball. But I know that he does really care. And he's like psychoanalyzing these children that he's known for 2 to 3 days.
And the chief is in like a different movie. He's in like Serpico or whatever.
Yes.
Like,
he's wearing a pinstriped button-up shirt with a slant-striped brown tie. It was jarring.
Like, I don't care about these kids. What about the case?
The case that I have done no work on and have yet to follow a lead on.
Yeah. So that's how we find out. Oh, I mean, these are like older children. Like, I think Ava's supposed to be 6, but like, she seems a little older.
Yeah.
But he's just like, here, go feed the ducks. And just holds up like a bag of old bread. And she's like, ah. And like, suddenly they've been like arguing and crying and yelling at each other.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he brings out the stale bread, she's like, ah, yeah. And they just like all run off to go feed the ducks.
Parenting is that easy, folks.
Oh, boy. So we find out through that conversation that the family Jesse nannies for is bank robbed.
The word is bankrupt.
Stupid. So Mac wonders then if Mr. Warner, who's Jesse's boss, is doing the robberies to cover his financial hemorrhaging. And he owns like a tire shop.
Right.
Tire company.
Tires on the go is what it's called.
Which has like one employee, which is Dean. So Mike has a rough day where Jesse and the kids are all mad at him for 3 separate non-reasons. The Bannermans are awful. The whole family, the kids are rude, the parents seem like this isn't their family, like they're just sort of like guests in this home.
Yeah, the parents are like, oh, thanks for dinner, whoever did this.
And Mike is like the one like leading conversation and like talking to the kids. And the parents are just like
shoveling food in their mouths.
Great.
Yeah. And the dad's like, tastes just like Panda Kitchen, Mike. Wink, wink. I don't know what the parents are doing. Were our parents like that?
Yes. Actually,
yeah,
mine were, yeah.
Huh. I don't know. I never had a nanny to ask me how I was feeling, so.
I never had anyone play princess with me or force me to play basketball. Actually, they did because I was freakishly tall as a child. I don't know if I've ever told you that. I was literally off the charts.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The growth charts my whole childhood. So everyone thought I would be a great basketball player.
They didn't know about your coordination.
There's two parts to being a great basketball player. At least like it also didn't seem like they were like, because I think my parents like talked to each other or whatever. Like it just like we weren't really a factor as the children.
Okay.
But like these parents just seemed like they're staying at an Airbnb or like
they had a limit on the amount of lines those actors could say per their contract. And
maybe. And there was no arc for them either. Like I thought maybe they would come around like, you know what? Our kids are really great. Maybe we will.
Yeah.
Do a background check on our next nanny. Nope. We're not going to.
We'll hire that one back.
We'll get the next whatever one they send and then we'll fire her and then get the other one back. So then I just really lost it that they're really, really awful. The house gets robbed while Mike is getting rejected by Jesse and they fire him because he might have forgotten to set the alarm, which still isn't.
But 6 other robberies have happened in this neighborhood and
literally,
every single person says, I am certain that I set the alarm.
Literally.
I'm certain that I set the alarm.
6 other robberies.
And then the 7th robbery happens and he's like, I'm certain I set the alarm. And they're like, well, you definitely didn't. There's no other way that they could have got in.
How could you have forgotten?
How could you have forgotten?
When I specifically told you to.
I explicitly said.
These poor kids have flakes for parents who then like just cycle through surrogate parents for them.
Right.
It's just awful.
Can we imagine Cookie parenting these children now that we look back?
Oh.
She was probably like a great older sister character.
Oh, Cookie. And you think also with like the agency probably sent Cookie. So why are they so trusting about the people that this agency sends?
Oh,
to
well,
them?
There's only one agency. This is Monopoly.
But they're not going to do any further checking or like, I mean, I guess back, no, they could have looked him up on Facebook or something. If they had done any research at all, they would have found out that he didn't use a different name. He used his real name.
He was actually just a cop.
They would have Googled it and it would have taken them to the Law and Order wiki.
Oh, to Chris N-O-T-H. And they would have been like, whoa, what a steal.
Mm-hmm. So why is it super easy for Jessie to turn down Mike, but she can't tell Dean that she's not interested after he like comes to see her all the time, asks her out, gets her that huge, pretty bouquet of flowers?
He's like really making a lot of overtures.
Very clear that he's interested. She has expressed to Mike that she's not interested in him. And then he gives her this bracelet and like why she didn't have any problems with rejecting Mike. She was just like, look, this isn't going to work out.
So are we to believe that she maybe actually likes Dean a little bit and that's why she's having trouble? Or?
Oh, because she already told Mike that like they didn't have chemistry.
She did. And she told Mike that they did have chemistry, but that he was too close to home and they'd never have any privacy. I'm doing air quotes. And that's like pretty weird too, because they live in different houses, so they would have privacy. They live in other people's houses. I'm very confused about the nature of their jobs still. I come back to this.
I mean, do they not have like friends or lives outside of?
No, they only have the identity of how many diapers they buy and keep on hand in their minivan.
Because like she's like a couple of times Jessie goes out and about.
Oh, but
while the mom, Mrs. Warner, has the baby. So then Jessie's like out like getting diapers or whatever.
Yeah, because whenever she goes out to coffee with Mike, she's like, oh, Mike, thank you for finally getting me out here to do something different than what I always do. So like she has no life outside of this family and her online master's in child psychology program and her discussion posts.
Yeah, and I also wondered why there wasn't more with other nannies. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's some brief chit-chat, but, like, they clearly are not, like, going out for drinks or mm-hmm. coffee or whatever. Like, that seemed like a missed opportunity. So, because Mike, I guess, messed up, which I still don't totally think that he did, the chief takes Mike off the case and puts Ramos in as the new nanny. And making Ramos a jerk really grates my cheese. I'm really glad that they figured out eventually, like more recently, that we celebrate other women, that women are not just a foil to like the handsome men who are the hero or whatever and just want to like.
Oh, in Hallmark universe, yeah. They figured this out?
Yeah. Like, or to the good guy. Because I think we're supposed to think like Mike's a good guy. And like this like shrew is just trying to like take him down or whatever. Like it just really. Like, why couldn't Ramos be just as capable as Mike, if not more so? And I'm really glad that as a network, they realize that the women need to be the hero, even though they're constantly foiled by men. Because that seems to be, like, how the mystery movies are now. It's like, you have a female protagonist. Like, that's what we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess one of the things that we were thinking when we talked about the Fixer Upper mysteries was how different it was. Like Mac didn't need to have some like hyper masculine persona to be like a broody, silent, strong type or whatever to like support Jewel and get or Shannon and get her like, you know, support her, whatever, just like support her in her mystery solving house fixing spree. So yeah, hopefully Hallmark has figured that out, but that I kind of feel like Cookie and Ramos both got short shrift, as well as the other two nannies. And then, like, we do have this scene where Mike has a long conversation with Mr. Bannerman about his job and like being a divorce attorney. But what does the wife do? We know that she's also an attorney. She's like, I have hours of casework to write tonight. But he's not like, oh, what about? He's just like, okay, later, player. He doesn't care.
Yeah, it's really, it feels like a different tone than the movies are now, which I think is a positive development. Because even like we talked about, you had asked about a Jesse Metcalf mystery that came up. Mm-hmm. And he is the lead in, he's the only male lead in a mystery series called Chesapeake Bay Murders or something. I can't remember what it's called now. No, Martha's Vineyard. Sorry.
The Martha's Vineyard mysteries.
Yeah. And I watched one of them and I'm just like, just kind of not as interested. Like I want to see a woman kicking some A and being right. And
was he in Swim Fan?
He was in the Wisteria Lane with Desperate Housewives.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, he might have been in Swim Fam too.
I don't know.
I think that Sarah Lancaster looks like, speaking of Swim Fam, Erica Christensen, who is from Swim Fam.
Is Sarah Lancaster
Jesse?
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
So literally in this case, he stole the case away from her, from Ramos. And now they're making her to be like this real stick in the mud, like uptight, like meh, meh. Like she can't even like have a decent conversation with the kids.
She just has to write on her notepad in the driveway.
She's yeah, what
I have
was that?
Work to do.
Yeah, I don't even know what
she has lines to draw.
She had a tablet.
Arrows. Oh, so that was maybe, a tablet?
Yeah.
Oh, she's a level two.
Yeah. Mike gives the chief and Ramos a pen that he bagged from the tire shop that had Dean's prints on it. Unclear why he didn't process that before.
Like immediately when he was suspicious of Dean as a possible robber. And when he presents it to them, I really liked the way he did it, which was they said, what is that? And he said, it's a tires on the go pen, as if they should just know what that is and why it's important.
Yeah, the only thing I could think is that maybe if, by that point they didn't have fingerprints from the crime scene, because it's when he overhears them talking about that that he's like, oh, but I feel like that should have been entered in evidence. It shouldn't have just been like in his desk drawer. Like, isn't that chain of custody issue?
Yeah.
But of course, the chief comes to Mike's apartment where Mike apologizes for the mess. And the chief says, it's okay. I've seen your desk.
Ooh. Where you keep evidence, unlogged evidence.
Mike is back on the cul-de-sac beat and checks in with the nannies about Jesse. They speculate that she ran off with Dean after he gave her a fancy bracelet they describe as a twisty thing with diamonds. And based on this vague description, Mike knows for sure it was a bracelet stolen from the Bannermans.
Well, Mike's got a real eye for jewelry. And Jesse's proven herself to be very flighty and would run off with anyone at the drop of a hat, clearly.
So his next move is to storm down to the tire shop and make some unfounded accusations to Mr. Warner. And the chief is right that Mike is too impulsive. Like, he really is.
Yeah, he didn't actually do detective work.
No, it was bad. It was really bad. And he calls back up. So, like, everybody arrives. Of course, the police chief comes for, that's what he does, apparently, is just come to every
call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then nothing's going on. But then Mike is like, wait, okay, follow me to the McNamara campaign. And he says, Mike says, you can fire me if I'm wrong. And the chief comes back with, I can fire you if you're right. Because he's in Serpico.
Oh, yeah.
He has like so many great like chief lines.
Invisible cigar moment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They all head down to McNamara headquarters where Cookie lures 5 cops into a warehouse and then locks them in.
That was amazing. That was really impressive.
I love Cookie.
She had that all planned.
Oh, like immediately. Like when she was like, I can get, let me just show you where they are.
Okay, they're in the warehouse. Okay.
Excuse me.
They're up in that little room up there that we built stairs up to. And then immediately the chief was like, keep an eye on her. And the other 3 cops in the room were like, not us. And then
she has bows in her hair. Who cares?
ran out and locked him in.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. Really quick thinking.
Mm-hmm. The real action is going down in an aging motorhome where McNamara, Dean, and Cookie are holding Jessie hostage. Although she's not reacting as such whatsoever. She's just sitting there very calmly.
Having tea with her friends.
There's a very slow, bizarre chase of the Winnebago, which probably can't go more than like 50 miles per hour. Like, I feel like they could have, couldn't they have chosen like a motorhome that looked like it could be like legitimately in a police chase? Like, they picked like the largest, oldest possible model, which, side note, I watched a documentary recently called Winnebago Man, which I don't recommend, but I do recommend that you go search on YouTube for Winnebago Man. It's like the original kind of viral videos.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. I had never seen it before. I didn't know anything about them.
They're pretty hilarious.
They're so hilarious, and I related so hard to Winnebago Man and his rage about life.
The world.
Yes.
So this, like, Winnebago taking hairpin turns down alleys while cops chase them was underpinned by yet another, I would say that maybe the words that they typed into the search bar for this music were
Starsky and Hutch.
No, it was just kind of like dark and mysterious, which is really not the theme of a midday car chase, but Winnebago chase. But it's just kind of like doo-doo. Do 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 do, and it was just like very subtle and like low and like had nothing to do with the impact of the scene. And you're kind of like, wow, it's a beautiful afternoon for a drive. I don't,
because they're going like 45 miles an hour.
Yeah,
they have a showdown in front of the Winnebago where Mike explains how everything went down. So McNamara had Warner get Dean to do the robberies, and Dean got Cookie to give him the alarm codes.
So did Warner know? Because I kind of feel like he didn't.
But then wasn't he in the Winnebago?
No.
Or he wasn't there?
No, that was McNamara.
Because
they left him at Tires
on
the Go.
They left him at the Tires.
I don't... That was very confusing, like... that McNamara, because this also all goes back to Mr. Bannerman is doing the divorce for Mr. Donahoe, who's the ICU guy. He's managing his divorce. And the reason that Mr. Donahoe even knew that Mr. Bannerman was a divorce attorney is because Cookie's cousin Dean works for Mr. Warner and somehow told Mr. Donahoe to hire Mr. This was the most convoluted.
I've already confused myself, but I
do remember trying to tease out the threads of that in my head, and I contemplated trying to write it out, but it's unintelligible.
So McNamara was having an affair with Mrs. Donahoe.
With Mrs. Donahoe.
And so maybe they just like added on an extra layer. Like, hey, Dean, when you're at that house breaking in, make sure that you kill this guy because I'm boning
his wife. Yeah, you're
so
right.
So that was just maybe a little extra.
And Dean was like, if it'll help me win Jesse's heart, I'd love to.
And Cookie... what did she say about her credit card debt? It was like super scary credit card debt.
All credit card debt is super scary.
Yeah, why didn't we get more Cookie?
I hope we do get more Cookie one day. I don't like the way I said that. Let's move on.
These are the worst cops of all time. After they were supposed to be watching Cookie, she locked them in a warehouse. And then during this confrontation, Dean easily gets out of their grasp and takes Jesse hostage.
No one's been put into handcuffs.
No, they're all just sitting around listening to Mike give his theory of the case. So Jessie sort of saves herself after 15 hours of being held hostage in a Winnebago. And immediately after, Mike asks if she wants to come with him to Ava's play. And I kind of wanted a scene of Ava's play.
Yeah.
But the movie just like ended.
Oh, yeah, because the main lady got chicken pox. The star of the play got chicken pox, which tells me that this was one of those bug chaser communities as well. We don't need to go into that. But why is like a 10-year-old getting chicken pox?
Is that unusual?
Well, at that point in 2018, in 2004, I think that I think that the chicken pox vaccine was like widely available and like routinely given to kids. So
maybe they're anti-vax.
That's what, yeah. Yes.
I can see Poplar Point having some.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or we'll just wait and see how it goes.
Well, hopefully she doesn't get it, but when she does, it'll ruin her chances at success and stardom on the silver screen stage of Poplar Point Middle School. Kindergarten? They're like in kindergarten.
She seemed older to me. Like she seemed like seven or eight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Was there anything in this movie that hit home? Any personal cats?
Oh man. The only thing that I could like pull out of myself for this movie is that sometimes when I walk Frank, he also seems to get like really tired, like he doesn't want to be there pretty quickly, a lot like Chester.
But is it all just a ruse that you're just really trying to like sleuth out a case and you're just, Frank is just a decoy?
I am constantly trying to sleuth out cases in my neighborhood. Nothing comes to fruition because there are none, because it's a normal neighborhood where murders and robberies don't happen nightly. So yeah, no, nothing really hit for me except for I did really like the look of Chester, but he just didn't seem like he wanted to be there, much like the rest of the cast, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Definitely everyone in that family.
Yeah, the parents did not want to be with their kids.
Well, I had several. The line that Jesse says that says, if you want something done, just ask a busy person to do it, really hit me in the groin.
Because that's you.
That's me.
Yeah.
It's like a steel trap I can't get out of. It also struck a chord that Jesse asks Mike during their intimacy intermission what he really wants to do. And I feel like this is an American problem. Like you're always supposed to be sort of like progressing, especially career-wise. You're always supposed to be striving for the next thing or like working towards the next thing or dressing for the job you want to have or, you know, all that stuff or whatever. It's like, why is it not just okay to be a nanny or a mechanic or just doing or working at a restaurant or like whatever? Like, it's just like why we're just so focused on like career and like that's our whole life and our purpose and our fulfillment. It's like, no, let's just maybe just enjoy things in our life and have more downtime and have more social connection or whatever. Like, so that kind of struck a chord. I just listened to a podcast about quitting and why people don't want to quit or think it's bad. There's like a lot of negative associations when really it's just like, this just makes sense in a lot of cases, like logical sense that like if something's not working for you, that you would leave it, that you would stop doing it. Like, it doesn't make sense to just keep going, but that we have these ideals around, like, linear progression. Like, you're just supposed to be, like I remember after my life fell apart a couple of years ago, that I had coffee with a nice older woman for some guidance or whatever. And she said that she realized at some point that she was somebody who was living backwards. And that really resonated with me because I realized that like you are supposed to be like following this linear progression of your life, like you with your career, but then also like you get married, you have kids, like you buy a bigger house, you get promoted and like all this sort of like you're building. And really like it doesn't work for everybody. Like, yes, I had this like nice, big, successful job, but I didn't like the stress. So I quit it and I did like something part time. And now I do something more behind the scenes. And I did have a nice house with a pool or whatever, but then that wasn't working. So now I live in a little tiny rental home that's too small. I don't know. I just, that kind of like struck a chord, which Mike did, I will say, he pushed back a little bit and was like, what's wrong with just being a nanny? Even though he's not actually a nanny.
Yeah. He had that line with Mr. Warner in the tire shop where he was like, hey, never say anyone is just a nanny ever again. Which like is, that was dumb. But like, yes, it's, I think maybe part of the striving, like the constant striving, is that we've been like thrust into this capitalist society that will not pay people enough money to live and have shelter and have food and maybe even, God forbid, save up a little bit of money to go on a vacation to do any of those jobs, those like part-time or like lower paying jobs that you might like have a lot less stress at but have more fun doing or whatever. And like, honestly, they never have less stress anyways, so that's sort of a joke too, but it's really frustrating.
Yes, that's definitely the case. I guess it's more like if you're very happy in that role, like you don't feel the need to like look for the next thing or whatever, like I guess financial reasons aside.
Yeah. Well, you and I had that conversation a few years ago, too, when my life fell apart, like a year or so before yours did. A few years, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. And I moved to this town and I was sort of in this like constant quest for like, but what am I going to do next? I got to get out of this house. I got to get out of this place. I like got to figure things out. And you told me that sometimes it's okay to just like put down roots in a community and like that being, that like putting down roots and like not going forward or like pushing forward is not the same thing as being stagnant. And that has always stuck with me as far as like, you probably don't remember saying that at all. But yeah, I was just sort of like, you know, I don't want to stagnate. I don't want to not be like constantly reaching for something. And you said that growing and working and doing inner work and self-worth work and all these things that like you and I have done a lot of over the last few years, doesn't mean that you're stagnating, even if you're staying in the same place.
Yeah. And like learning, I think I definitely, when I was younger, thought like I needed to travel and like find myself through that way. And like new experiences, new people, new exposure to things. But finally realized that like, I didn't have to be myself or figure anything out because like I could always just start out fresh and this new thing or whatever. And it's actually like being in the same place, being in community, like having long-term relationships is where like you actually learn like who you are and who you want to be and develop those types of connections that are more like enriching, or what actually research shows are like the most enriching things are social connections. So,
yeah.
Yes. And then also, were you ever a nanny?
Yeah, I was. And the reason I didn't bring it up is because like my nanny experience was so much different. I was like, well, I was a nanny to my niece when I was an adult, but I had two other jobs at the same time and I didn't live with them. But when I was like a teenager, like a young teenager, like 14, 15, 16, maybe I had my driver's license at that point, I was a nanny and I would take care of three children, ages 7, 5, and 3, I think. And then there was a newborn and I was in charge of all of them. And I was like a child in charge of these children while their parents would like go out and do stuff.
That is straight up Babysitter's Club.
It was
nonsense.
Wild.
Like, let's put this 13-year-old in charge of like a baby and two kids.
I know that. I mean, I'm responsible and like I took care of them and they were like fine and they ate and stuff. But that's scary. I wasn't even CPR certified. Were you ever a nanny?
I was a nanny and I was terrible at it and literally had to like Google.
Mike.
Yes. What do 6-month-olds eat?
Oh.
That was an actual Google search that I made.
The parents didn't tell you?
No.
Oh, wow.
It was a single dad And he was in a real rough situation at that time. So I think he was very frazzled.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't know anything about, I'm also in this position where like Mike is fish out of water, like, oh, look at this grown man who's trying to take care of kids. That's what women do. I kind of relate to that because I was not socialized like most girls were to like care for children. I just wasn't. I don't know why. My parents are really old, so I never was around other children. I was around other dogs. So I love dogs and spent a lot of time with them, but I was never around like young children. Like I don't know what to do with them. Like, so I think most women were socialized at a young age to like know what to do. And I never know what to do. I kind of do now because I've worked with children, but it took me like literally years to realize this is not a good fit for me. Like I was a nanny. I worked at a children's shelter. I led a Girl Scout troop. I was a big sister. I was a CASA volunteer. And now looking back, I'm just like, why? Why? I like knew myself so little in terms of like accepting like this is not what I need to be doing with my time. I should be at the library sorting through books. That's what I should be doing.
So grateful that you found that part of yourself. And have come to that because I didn't know you when you were in the like child phase of your life. And I don't know. I think, yeah, it doesn't fit with like almost anything that I know about you.
It never fit. And I just wouldn't accept that it wouldn't fit because I think we are told as women that like your worth is based on like, this is how you make a difference. This is the most powerful thing you can do. This is like through like working with a child, raising a child, whatever. And like, it was never a good fit for me. It was just like banging my head like over and over again. Like, so probably damaged a lot of children over the years.
I'm sure that's not true.
I mean, I like them. I just don't have that like, that, oh my God, look at blah, 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 blah.
I don't know. I mean, it's also, I've been around a lot of kids and like, a lot of kids also really enjoy interactions with people that don't, you know, treat them like little stupid children. I don't know. I think that there is also something to be said for being an adult that like gave a child like the autonomy or individuality or whatever to not be treated like, oh, tell me more about SpongeBob on your sneakers,
yeah,
Joey.
Well, because I think I see them as peers or like adults. Like that's how I treat them.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just had a conversation with my friend that she was, I guess, offended that I had dinner with her and her daughter and like that I didn't say hi to her. And I was like, well, when you guys walked up, I said, hey, guys, like, how are you doing? And I was like, what did you need me to do in that moment? Like, did you need me to like lean down and say like, hi, Tina, how are you? And she was like, yeah, I think I did. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. And she was like, well, I guess I just feel like that's what I wanted when I was little. Like I felt very ignored.
Oh,
that no one was paying attention to me. So I think that's probably my thing. Like, that's what I'm wanting. And I was like, when I was a kid, like I hated that. I hated it when people would like lean down and be like, mm-hmm. How are you today? Mm-hmm. Oh, you like read? Oh, are you? Oh, you're so like, I hated all of that. Like I hated the condescension. I hated the attention. Basically I was born an elderly woman. Anyways. Okay. Who are you attracted to?
Ooh. I know this might be a little controversial, but I really liked Gil McNamara. I thought he was kind of a like a voiceless, almost faceless entity.
Did he have a line?
I don't think he had He might have had a line at the very end outside of the Winnebago.
Were all of his, like, campaign signs that were sprinkled throughout the movie everywhere,
yeah,
did they have that, like, subconscious effect on you?
I think they did, because I was like, oh my gosh. Like a, he's like a...
He seems dependable.
He seems dependable.
I bet he's tough
he's
on gonna crime.
He's going to keep this community safe and sound. Oh, which is, like, antithetical to my entire set of core values. But I think it was honestly just his broad forehead.
Yeah, he had a unique look.
He just had, like, a unique look. Mm-hmm. Not attracted to, you know, the person or his value system, but he did like his look. And I also liked Cookie's look a lot. I would really enjoy dressing like her, even mm-hmm. though I don't think I could pull it off.
Mm. It's a lot of maintenance.
Yeah, it's too much. I spend -3 minutes getting ready in the morning, so that I can't. It won't happen.
Yeah.
But it'd be cool.
She was great. Yeah. Yeah, she's a little similar vibe to Danny, a character in the garage sale mysteries. But again, it's just like so much maintenance. Like, it's very cute, but I could never do it. I thought was Dean was super hot. And I wanted Jesse to go out with him. I was like, what's wrong with him? And it turns out what's wrong with him is that he
is a kidnapper and a robber and an assaulter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Turns out. Yeah. Also, he gives gifts that are like stolen goods. That's
and then when you give them back, he's like, "Why do you think I stole it?" And then you're like, "Well, did you?" And he's like, "Get in here!" And he grabs you and takes you inside the house.
Also, I didn't know he had a camouflage backpack. Like, I don't know. I didn't know the full story with Dean, but at first I thought he was cute at the end too. All right,
he was indeterminately attractive. Inoffensive.
Any fanfic for side characters?
I wanted to see the play. I wanted to see like the background of Ava's mm-hmm. play and like who's leading it and who's trying to get 7-year-olds to play Sleeping Beauty. And like I wanted to watch the audition process.
Oh my gosh, was there a kiss scene?
Exactly. I mean, that's like a fairly like, I was very scared of that movie as a child. It's like had
that
some very adult
really scary.
Themes, and it was like really dark and twisty.
The music was really scary.
The animation was scary. And also, like, you know, hasn't she been, she's been like asleep. So she's like not, there's like all those weird themes of like non-consensual kissing. I don't know. It was a weird play to put on for a 7-year-old. So I think I would have liked to dive into that a little bit. I don't think Hallmark will do it. I don't think we can expect that.
I wanted this movie to be completely remade. It's been enough time now. They could do it. Where the nannies come together to solve the crime.
Ooh,
didn't
yeah.
that seem like a natural? Like, why are we wasting these nannies? Like,
yeah. I liked that curly-haired nanny. And I liked the one that that they brought Meatloaf to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those were the only two. But I really liked them. They were fun, and they made fun of him for not knowing how to open a juice box, and that was a good time.
Let's make a movie with that.
Yeah. The Nanny Club Mysteries. It'll have a better title once we have our wits about us. It's like 107 degrees today. Just, I've melted. My brain is melted.
Well, you melt outside, and then you come inside, and you're just like blasted with freezing cold air. Like, there's no in between.
You feel like you have the flu constantly.
Invasion of the Hallmark Body Snatchers. The woman who plays the mayor also plays Lillian in Aurora Tea Garden Mysteries, and she's an uptight stick in the mud in that one, too.
Hmm.
She's like the foil to Candace Cameron Bure's, like, allegedly chipper. We'll at some point maybe cover Aurora Mysteries, but I have thoughts about her. But and then Mr. Bannerman is in a lot of stuff, and I think he's been a killer before. When he came on the screen, I got that killer feeling.
Okay.
Steam level?
Ooh. Tepid.
I thought that this was overly sexy for a Hallmark, to be honest. I don't know if this was a different era, but I would have thought this was a Lifetime movie.
Because of all the boobies?
Well, Jesse sort of scantily clad the whole time, which I think is realistic for actual nannies, but not Hallmark. And then Donna Ho's wife is overtly sexual.
Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot about her.
She was really laying it on thick.
Yeah.
And then she and McNamara were like openly
making out,
sucking face.
Yeah.
And they're both married to other people.
Such a gross term.
That's like for Hallmark? I mean,
Actually, the kiss at the end sort of surprised me.
It was a real actual kiss.
It was like, a real actual kiss.
Spit was swapped. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of divorce talk, which is usually a big no-no for Hallmark. Like, they rarely make a character divorced at all.
Mm.
Like, if they're single, it's because someone died.
Right.
It's never because they're divorced.
Like, or because the engagement got broken off.
Because it wasn't right.
Because it wasn't right, lest we forsake the sanctity of the marriage.
He wanted to work on Christmas, so this
he
deserved what he got.
All the things.
Yeah, they just, like, don't mention it. It's like, if we don't talk about this or mention it, like, we don't want to give people the idea, like...
That they could get divorced.
That they could get divorced, that it's an option.
Yeah.
And then they talk about, like, chemistry, which seemed, like, coded for, like, sensuality.
Yes, tingly feelings.
Uh-huh.
In your jitterbug.
And I was also shocked that that kid called someone stupid. He also called someone a loser. He said Ramos was a loser.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
She was even more of a loser than you.
And then the daughter said Ramos's meatloaf looked like poo.
I forgot about that.
Like, I could not believe this was a Hallmark movie.
Wow. So this was not even, this was like rated PG.
Probably. Not our usual Gs that we have. This was maybe like a PG.
Wow. Parental guidance for the poo.
Yeah. Yep.
And the S word, as my family grew up calling it. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed to say stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am, an adult, running my mouth. Got to put money in the jar.
And then they have a real kiss at the end.
Yeah, that was I forgot about the kiss. That was quite a... I haven't seen a kiss like that on a Hallmark screen yet. And I'm the Hallmark newbie, so I don't, you know, have as much experience as you. But it was noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
It was not dry, let's say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was moisture. It was prolonged.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had any Hallmark IRL moments?
Well, as you know, I am an avid water aerobics individual. And the people that do water aerobics at noon on weekdays are the elders of our community, by and large, and me. And so for the last three summers, I've been going to the pool with all these ladies and, like, doing water aerobics and, like, floating around their little circle trying to, like, laugh at their jokes if they made them, which doesn't usually happen. But, you know, they're talking about, like, their days and, like, what they're doing. And I'm just, like, doing my aerobics and, like, trying to break in. And when I went on Monday a few days ago, I sat down at a table and one of the ladies said, remind me of your name again. And so I reminded her of my name, which she'd never asked for. So I told her my name. And then she was like, oh, yeah. And you're a student here. And I said, nope, I'm a nurse. And she said, oh, in the NICU? And I said, nope, labor and delivery. And she said, oh, I don't know how you do those 12-hour days. And I said, I don't either, Jean. And that we had a whole conversation and it was so great. And I feel like maybe we could be the cast or the inspiration for a Hallmark movie.
Oh my gosh, I could totally see
it. It would be so fun.
One of the teachers of the classes would get murdered and all of the students would get together to try to solve it.
Oh my gosh, that would be so fun. Except I don't want any of our teachers to get murdered. They're all really great. So maybe one of the pool...
Lifeguards? I mean, we need to take down some of those lifeguards.
If we ever watch a Hallmark pool movie, I will have a major personal cat because lifeguards and I have always had a real rough time. Like, we beef. And I don't know why. I don't know how it happens.
Do they blow their whistle at you?
They blow their whistle at me. They, like, tell me I can't do things, and I don't know the rules, and I just want to know the rules. I just want to know, like, what am I doing? So I, like, read the little sign, and then I go get in the water, and they're like, no, not there.
Oh, because that one side is closed sometimes, but they
randomly,
don't know why.
But they don't tell you, and there's, like, no sign. I don't know. I just want to know the rules so that you don't whistle at me. So anyways, I don't like lifeguards, and yeah, we can murder
one
of them.
Okay, so one of them can be killed, yeah.
They're all college students, but... just, you know, more drama for the situation.
Yeah, there'll be like a love interest, and like you'll be like, well, you know that I, he always flirted with this lifeguard over here. And one time I caught them a sucking face.
Underwater. Yeah, so that was my Hallmark IRL. I finally bonded with people who somehow think I'm still a college student.
Sure. Which well, is, if you're not 75, then...
Everyone's a college student.
Yeah, some banter. Great.
Yeah, it was good.
I have only had real life lately. I have not had any Hallmark, sadly. But okay, well, we are back. We have an actual audience now, sort of each other and Sarah's friend.
Woo!
So we're gonna
love you, Summer.
We're gonna be held more accountable now to actually get in the studio and do more recording, and hopefully the recording will actually record, and then we can actually release it. Or else we're just gonna really there was an article that came out recently about most podcasters only make it to episode 3.
Oh,
and then there's another drop off at episode 10.
Oh,
which I think we're around that number.
Yeah,
so we just got to push through.
Well, we had just recorded ep 8, and then we lost it, and so this is new ep 8. So. Okay.
So fingers crossed. You've been listening to Hallmarked for
Murder.